weekly news review show with Dr. Lou Campomenosi. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highways 90 and 98, and in Malbus on 181. And now, Dr. Lou Campomenosi.
Well, good morning, Lori.
Good morning. How are you? Great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good. It's another beautiful morning in the deep south. I'm certainly glad to be awakened to something as pretty as this. Do hope that you and everyone had a wonderful Easter.
Yes.
Of course, you know, clouding everything, you know, is what's going on in the national arena. And again, I think, like we've been talking about, some of the things that Biden has been doing are just absolutely ridiculous. And I think, and despite the fact that every week we talk about this, it just gets worse. I mean, I want to mention, again, I'll talk a little bit about the border and just in a little bit. Want to look at some of his, you know, fundamentally changing America legislation. Whether it's the Green New Deal non-infrastructure bill for close to $2 trillion, or H.R. 1, which is essentially, you know, a federal takeover of the election process, which is, you know, absolutely outrageous. So, I mean, how is it that we're supposed to maintain, you know, some sort of rational equilibrium in dealing with this kind of stuff? I mean, I know it was bad in the Obama years, but this is so far beyond Obama. I mean, and
worse than Obama.
Absolutely. And what is so ironic is that Biden is doing all of this with a very limited amount of power, because the House, he's only got 6 votes in the House that they own, and you've got a tie in the Senate. I mean, during the Obama period, they had supermajorities in both houses of Congress, and yet they were restrained. And I think the lesson they learned was, go for it while you got it. And that's what they're trying to do, to ram the stuff. And now we're down to where if Joe Manchin and the cinema lady from Arizona say no, that's what everything is hinging on. You know, will the Senate say no to H.R. 1? We're going to see. Will the Senate say no to this Green New Deal, you know, what, $1.9 trillion infrastructure bill, which is really not an infrastructure bill? It's sort of like what happened with the the COVID bill. 9% of the COVID bill was COVID-related, and this has about maybe 15, maybe 20% at the most for infrastructure. And they're redefining all sorts of things about what infrastructure really is. And to a point, I would say getting broadband done makes sense.
Could we get the I-10 Bayway Bridge included in this huge package?
Well, of course, Lori. That theoretically is infrastructure. I mean, traditional infrastructure. So we'll see where all this goes. But, I mean, in the end, you're still left with, you know, the taxation that he wants to do. You're left with the big debt crisis. And as I've said to you all before, this issue about how we're paying for our debt. The interest on the debt is paid on about 2% of interest right now. So it's affordable, technically. But what happens if that the normal interest rates are reimposed? Somehow it all works out this way, because the Feds are going to have to tighten up at some point. And when those interest rates go to 5%, you're talking about a whole bunch of money, and our budget is only capable of paying off so much of it. So what happens to the other budget items that are, quote, necessary? Defense, you know, Social Security, blah, blah, blah. Get the picture here. It's all going to come down like a house of cards crumbling if they don't get a handle on this. So, I mean, so, you know, my sense of this is that every week we say the same thing. And the only thing that we can hope for, I think, is that, number one, people like Sinema and Manchin in the Senate, you know, think carefully about what they're doing and possibly say no to the train wreck that's coming. And our other recourse is what is actually going on with some of our attorney generals and secretaries of state filing lawsuits. And, of course, you know, you've got this issue of Georgia, which leads me to where I'm going this morning, okay? So I've kind of gotten off track a little bit, but let's do this. Let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on nationally, as I always do, but I also want to talk about some state issues today, too. And I've been, you know, last week I didn't even get to mention a state issue, so I'm going to definitely do that this today. But first, let's take a look at what is going on with the Georgia election reform legislation. All right, so, I mean, Georgia got hammered yet last week. Governor Kemp, who deserves to be hammered, okay, let's be clear about this. I'm not going to give him a silver star for standing up against what's going on to them, because he doesn't deserve anything after what he allowed in 2020. And I mean, I'm sorry, I just kind of can't deal with this. He should have stopped what was going on with Stacey Abrams immediately in March of 2020, when she got that court, you know, the court over there to go along with the whole idea of the pandemic is creating a need to do mail-in ballots without a lot of identification associated with it. That was a prescription for exactly what happened. So Kemp just sort of rolled over on that one. But oh no, now he's fired up. Of course, it doesn't matter now because of what happened in 2020. I recognize it matters. I got that, okay? I'm just saying he's a day late and a dollar short. And that's the problem, okay? We're going to fix something that could have and should have been fixed back in 2020. But he didn't, for whatever reason. And I have my suspicions about why he didn't do it back in 2020. We don't need to get into it right now. But here they have, actually, the Georgia legislature did something that, and actually, listen to good old Dr. Lou here. I happen to have a good relationship with Secretary of State Merrill. And I knew that Merrill knows Kemp. And I think I've mentioned this to you before. I texted Secretary Merrill and asked him, why don't you get Kemp to call a special session and fix the problems that we already know exist because of the consent decree that Stacey Abrams got through the courts back in March of 2020. And Secretary Merrill's reply was that, well, Kemp just didn't want to do that and he wasn't going to go down that road. Of course, now they just have gone down that road. They did everything that they should have done and could have done after the November election, but they waited to today. Well, at least they did do something. But of course, they're getting hammered over that because, oh my goodness, this is voter suppression. And as you've seen, the CEOs of, what was it, Delta and Coca-Cola, they go on and mealy-mouth around and, oh no, it's voter suppression. You've got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. Why is it voter suppression to ask for an identification, you know, when you do a mail-in ballot? And while the question about signatures was all over the place in 2020, well, they solved that. You have an ID number. You don't even have to have a photo ID like you do in Alabama. You get your ID number, or you've got a Social Security number or a driver's license number or something along those lines. And while that's better than what they did before, because they were arguing about signatures, the fact of the matter is that the Alabama model is the model to go by. And so this question about no excuse absentee ballots, well, they passed on that, which again was a liberal argument. In Alabama, you still have to have a reason. And if you have a reason, then you have to go through a very rigorous process. But what's wrong with that? It's not discriminatory, according to the Supreme Court of the United States. Merrill won that case. What we have is not discriminatory. And just because Stacey Abrams and folks want to do mail-in ballots that required that the state just shoot out ballots to everyone who was on the rolls, well, you know that was a prescription for a disaster, which it was, in all of the states that it was done. Because the state registrar's rolls were not all that good. as we've seen. So when you add up what Georgia has tried to do, tightening up, extending voting days, you know, early voting, doing some things on the margin with the ballot drop box, but ballot drop boxes were a problem. But they've included that. They've tightened up some of their election laws within the counties, which Secretary of State Merrill has been a firm believer in, that they had to do that so that they would have, the Secretary of State's office would actually be in control of the elections rather than each county. So I do think that, you know, when you see the liberal reaction to this, I hope that Georgia and them just fight back and say, you know, go to hell. And the rest of us boycott both of those entities. There's no reason we should buy another Coke. We're not. We bought our last case of Coke, or not a case of whatever it was, 12, a week and a half ago. That's it. No more. I just think that we have got to be able to figure out a way to fight back. It's just like fighting back against Twitter and Facebook. Get off of them. That's the simple solution to fighting. Get off of them. Now, I realize that it's not that easy. Someone like Jim Ziegler, who's got 55,000 people on his Facebook page, there has to be a way to make a quick transition from that Facebook page to whatever else is coming. And I understand Trump is supposed to be coming up with something. But there is Parler and this and that, okay, and Gab. And I haven't heard anything about Gab other than some people said it was anti-Semitic, and so the GOP was telling people to get off of it. Laura is looking at me, and she's got something to say. Go ahead, Laura.
Well, I actually have a comment from a listener listening to the program right now who said, there are reasons the other side is trying to say that people of color and black people have trouble having ID cards. Is that not racist in itself? If I were a black person, I would be quite offended that they're advertising that we have trouble obtaining identification.
Well, of course. I mean, that goes hand in hand with what, you know, we've said all along. But, I mean, Alabama's non-discriminatory laws are also, you know, helped by the fact that John Merrill has made it very easy to get identification, okay? So that argument about suppression along those lines, I think, just doesn't hold water, okay? So, I mean, so here we have these issues about what's going on with Georgia, and every week it's the same thing, voter suppression. And we just have to stay engaged and say no to this. Fight it as best we can. Let's talk a little bit about the chaos on the border. I mean, how much more chaos do you need to see? Well, guess what, folks? You're going to see a whole lot more. Because right now, according to the Washington Post, of all sources, this is the highest number of people coming across the border in 15 years. That's how bad it is. Now, Biden doesn't want to call it a crisis, okay, fine. If you want to have this semantic discussion, have at it. But at the same time, the rest of the world, you know, knows what's happening. And to assign his vice president to sort out this problem and say, oh, she's going to be the border czar. Well, guess what? Jan Psaki, their public relations person, said, well, you know, not quite. What she's going to be doing is meeting with the triangle countries down in Central America and trying to come up with some sort of a solution. All right, now understand this. This is the same woman, Kamala Harris, who had nothing to do with, you know, with the border, other than to say she didn't want a border during her primary. That primary which she had to quit on because nobody was voting for her. That's just a small problem, but nevertheless, you know, she said that. Don't want a border. Okay. And then, of course, she labeled ICE a new version of the KKK. I mean, this is what we're dealing with, folks. Now, how we contend with this is really going to rest upon the states, the border states. And you've seen Governor Abbott. You've seen this Governor Ducey from Arizona. These people are not sitting around, you know, just letting it all happen.
They're putting their National Guard down there to assist the Border Patrol. They're doing what they can do. Now, notice I haven't said too much about the unaccompanied minors who are now at about 18,000 in facilities which hold maybe 5,000. And it's not that I don't care about them, but what I do care about are two things primarily. And this administration hasn't given us a satisfactory answer on any of it right now. Number one, how is it that we're letting these COVID people, COVID carriers, come into the country, and then they're releasing them into the interior? That makes absolutely no sense, especially when, you know, you've got all of these people taking the high and mighty road of, oh, you've got to have a mask, and you've got to do this, and you've got to do that. And meanwhile, the same people who believe in all that crap also don't care about these folks going into the interior, where you can certainly see the spread going to happen. What the hell is going on? And of course, the short answer to that is they want it to happen this way. They want these people to be voters. So that's one issue. The other issue is this catch and release program. We're back to that. And the abuse of the system is so flagrant. Okay. It is Monday morning, so I can make at least one mistake.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. All right. So I mean, think about this. Their game plan is to bring all of these people and get them to be voters as soon as they can. And of course, Biden made sure during the campaign that he was going to give citizenship to the 11 or so million people who are illegally here already. So Lori's shaking her head, and yes, we're all shaking our head. It's like, what? Well, you see, that there's an acronym I could use here, but I will pass on that. But you folks know what I'm saying. What is going on, okay? Okay. Just saying. And so, once again, we're back to fundamental opposition. How do we do this? The attorney generals in these states, all of our red states, have got to be fighting. And they are doing that. But It is just absolutely amazing how difficult this process is, and how dependent we are upon individual state attorney generals for getting fired up and doing something about things that we all know have to be done. I tried to get in touch with the attorney generals and our attorney general. You can't just call up there and leave a message or anything like that, okay? The lack of transparency is apparent, but we're going to try to make sure that we get our voices heard up in Montgomery one way or another. So the border, unbelievable. But just as bad as that is, oh, now we're going to raise taxes on businesses. And you're thinking to yourself, well, those damn business people, they deserve to pay more. Well, guess what? They may pay more, but you're going to pay more, because they're just going to pass it off to you. What is really happening, and Trump understood this, if we don't make our taxation, you know, reasonable, then our businesses are not going to be competitive in the world market. So the business tax went from 35% down to 21%. Other people like Larry Kudlow, you know, wanted to bring it even lower. But 21% seemed to put us in a good competitive position. Now these guys want to move it to 28%. What's going to happen? You're just going to find more offshoring. They're going to just go out of you know, overseas to figure out ways to produce their goods at a cheaper rate. So think about this. And if you think that the Trump tax, you know, cuts that went to the middle class, and they can say all they want about this is that was just a boom for the rich. Forget that. What's going to end up happening if they go ahead and undermine those tax cuts, then you're going right back to the same rate you had before the tax cuts. That sort of sounds like a tax increase to me. Just saying, that's what's going to happen with this. And they can say all they want about $400,000 and more are the only ones that are going to be touched. Well, that's another issue, because most small businesses are owned by people who are in that bracket. And so what happens to the place where most, you know, jobs are created, small businesses? They're going to get hit. Now, isn't it interesting that Biden goes on TV and makes it sound like we're in the middle of the Depression in 1935, and you just had 950,000 almost jobs created in March? The highest number of jobs come in the pandemic since last August, when Trump and them had, I think over 1 million. Now think about this. What they're doing is they're dumping, pumping trillions of dollars into the economy, which is a prescription for what? Inflation. So hold on and see what happens with all this. But this question about raising taxes is absurd. Okay, now we get back to my favorite thing, which is foreign policy. You may not know it, but tomorrow our officials are going to meet with the Iranians and the other members of the nuclear deal group. Germany, UK, France, blah, blah, blah. I don't care about them. What I care about is we're still trying to get the Iranians back to the so-called table to reinvent the nuclear deal, which was flawed at the outset, and I'm not going to get into all of that, but just frame it this way, okay? Trump was able to leverage Americans' ability to sanction Iranian oil and bring them to their knees, okay? If you didn't notice it, but over the weekend, our Chinese friends have signed an agreement with our Iranian buddies to do what? The Chinese are going to fund various projects inside Iran, and the Iranians are going to return the favor with in-kind money in the name of oil. The Chinese need oil. The Iranians need cash. Okay? And so what's happening is a nice little arrangement to where now the Iranians are going to get things funded. And what are they going to do with that money? What they couldn't do with it during the Trump period, they'll be able to fund their buddies, the Houthis in Yemen, which I talked about last week. Think about Yemen, right on the Red Sea, controlling that area. It's geostrategically important that the Iranians don't control Yemen. It's kind of a 1+1=2 equation. The other thing that's happening here is that they'll be able to fund Hamas and Hezbollah and their buddies in Iraq. You know? I don't know about you, but I mean, if I can see this, why can't the people in Washington, D.C. see this? It's not rocket science, folks. The Iranians are an implacable enemy. There is no reforming the mullahs. The whole religion is determined to blow up the world in order to bring about the Mahdi's return. I mean, that's what you're dealing with. And as far as the Chinese are concerned, you know, Bush called it the axis of evil. It hasn't changed too much. But the new players are pretty easy. China, Iran, North Korea, and to a very large degree, Russia. So I'm just saying, we can, you know, think foreign policy doesn't matter, but it does. And that's something that we're going to have to start thinking about. All right, let me talk about state issues before Lori gives me the hook here. You know, it's now 10:29. Notice how I really wanted to talk about state issues, and now I've got 5 minutes. I love it. All right, so here's the thing that we have to kind of think about with state issues. First of all, on Wednesday, There's going to be a education committee meeting in the House, and it is going to be about HB 440. Common Sense Campaign will be getting action alerts out for you to call and support HB 440. It is a replacement for Common Core. Finally, this is the first time that Tracy Collins, or Terry Collins, who is the chair of the Education Committee, is allowing a hearing on this. And you're saying, well, Dr. Liu, why do you think that is? Very simple, folks. She's gotten over $25,000 from the Business Council of Alabama that wanted Common Core for all of these years. And so now they finally had to relent and let us have an opportunity to discuss the bill. Listen, I don't know why it is that they're doing this. I'll be honest with you. I think it's a sham. They're not going to allow this to come to a floor vote, but they want to go through the motions. But guess what? If I have an opportunity to say this, I will say it. This is a damn joke, because you people who are sitting there on the so-called Education Committee, you know damn good and well that Alabama is at the bottom of the education, right? We have a crisis of Alabama education, and you've done nothing about it. Okay, so I'm getting hot about it. Lori said, oh, God, he's going to have a heart attack. I might.
Do you attend this meeting?
Yes, I'm going to be speaking.
Oh.
I'm just giving you a portion of what I'm going to say. I'm going to call them out. They're giving us 3 minutes, and the Alabama education is a crisis. You've got to be kidding me. You couldn't carve out a little bit of time from your busy schedules? It's BS. Okay, see, I didn't go all the way as I wanted to say. Okay, but nevertheless. Okay, so Common Sense will be giving you some information on this, and I'll make sure I send it to Lori. Call about supporting HB 440. Here's another one, HB 570. Your local House member down here in South Baldwin, y'all are listening to this one, you know that the Gulf Shores broke off from Baldwin County Schools and started their own system, okay? They quickly learned that it cost a little bit more than they expected, but they had signed a contract with the Baldwin school system that basically kept all the tax dollars, except for about $1 million, going to Baldwin County. And now Gulf Shores wants more of that money. So Representative McMillan went ahead and submitted this bill, HB 570. We are opposed to it. The contract was between Gulf Shores and Baldwin County. They gave up certain rights in return for other things that Baldwin County actually was paying the mortgage on the buildings that the Gulf Shores folks got. So our feeling is Gulf Shores signed a deal, let them live with it, okay? The next thing I want to talk about is HB 200. And this is a firearms bill that, and I've talked about this before, like Arizona had signed a bill which basically said if the feds pass unconstitutional legislation, then our agencies are not going to be allowed to implement any of that legislation. So this bill is sitting in committee. We think that it needs to be pushed because, again, what we're trying to have is a sanctuary state approach, and I think it's important to do that. Our next one is SB 97. Okay, we've talked about this before, and essentially what we're trying to do here is control and contain and bring about a little bit more balance in between the executive branch and the legislative branch. So instead of Governor Ivey being able to impose, you know, restrictions like she did under the Emergency Act, we want to keep it to about 45 days, and then if she wants to do more, or the governor in this particular case, whoever it might be in the future, then they have to go before the lieutenant governor and the speaker pro tem, the pro tem leader of the House, Senate, golly, it is Monday, and the Speaker of the House. And they have to get authorization, and if they need to, they will call the legislature back into special session to agree to it. This is a good approach, okay? And I think it is important that we see things like this happening. Here are two other bills, HB 500 and SB 259. Both of these bills are important checks on the executive branch because it will allow the state legislature to call itself back into session independent of who? The governor. Now, about 36 states have this ability, and I think it's time Alabama has that ability too. And again, like I said, Common Sense Campaign will be getting a list together, and we'll get this out there for you to call and do what you can do on it. Here's another one. This is SB 290 by Senator Albritton. And actually, this is another one of these things which is a constraint on who? The governor. In this case, Albritton's bill basically says before the governor can sign a contract like she did over this prison issue, that the legislature has to have approval. Now, this is sort of the horse is out of the barn problem, but the issue is critical, and we do think, and I know, you know, our state agitator, Ziegler, is in the process of filing a lawsuit basically saying that it was unconstitutional for her to sign this because money is involved and the executive branch cannot pay salaries or anything like that. So there we have it. I think that all of these kinds of state issues like that, I'm going to post these things on our website. We'll have all this information out there. But the bottom line is, and I'll send this to Lori so she can put it on her Facebook, we have got to have some of you all engaged to call on HB 440 for starting tomorrow when they come back into session. I'll be up there saying my piece on Wednesday, and we'll see where this goes. I don't have a great deal of hope for it, but we'll see. All right, before I close out, next week, Congressman Mo Brooks, who I mentioned to you last week, was at our rally.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be on the program, and I'm going to try to work it out with Lori to see if we can't have a little extra time. And, of course, I will dig into my wallet to make it a little bit easier for Lori to say yes.
And what is the contact information, the website you're referring to for folks to learn more?
Yes, commonsensecampaign.org. Just
commonsensecampaign.org.
Go there. Commonsensecampaign.org.
Okay.
And if you go on there, you'll have a link to our Facebook page there, too. All right, folks, so another quick half hour. Boy, Lori, it just goes so fast.
It does.
I don't know. I mean, might have to go for an hour one of these years. We'll see.
Thank you so much.
Larry wouldn't mind. I mean, Lori wouldn't mind.
All
right, folks. Great to be back. Hope you all had a great Easter. Looking forward to next week with Mo Brooks. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highways 90 and 98 and in Malbus on 181. If you missed part of the program or want to tell a friend, you can listen later at our website, wabf1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.